weather's getting wetter, warmer, wilder, windier, all kinds of extremes, and that is what we're going to be talking about in this next segment. Sharon Begley is the correspondent who did this great story asking, are you ready for more? Are we ready for more? Is America prepared? And the answer is a big fat no, of course. And how can we prepare for these tornadoes on steroids? This is no tornado that we've ever seen before, what we're seeing this year, turning Walmarts into a pile of splinters, basically, leveling whole blocks, even whole towns, killing and destroying so much in its path, and the human toll just now really beginning to be felt in places like Joplin, Missouri. But, you know, look what happened in Tuscaloosa. Look what happened, you know, just before that. We forget so quickly because there's been so many of these record-breaking, destructive, damaging weather events that, you know, we go on to the next one, and these poor people are left behind who have lost everything, trying to pick up the pieces of their lives, literally. And is this what we're going to be, you know, seeing more of? If so, well, I guess people can no longer deny that something weird is going on with the weather, and perhaps it is climate change. Let's see what Sharon Begley found out in this important research that she did. Thanks for joining me, Sharon.
Thank you,
on the Greenfront.
Nice to be with you.
Congratulations on this timely topic. I mean, there are those of us who have been covering this climate beat for a decade, but we love when we see mainstream media outlets like Newsweek, you know, doing really big stories on this, and it's pretty hard not to right now.
Well, there's a lot to talk about, exactly.
And we've been not talking about it and not doing much about it, and that's left us quite vulnerable, hasn't it? Not that anyone could have predicted this, not that we can even for certain say this is a result of climate change, but if you look at, you know, more people have been killed by tornadoes and twisters this year than ever before. If you look at the velocity and ferocity of these storms, something clearly is going on.
Yes, and we have to say two things at the top. One is that, indeed, as you just implied, the climate science connecting an increase in the power of tornadoes or an increase in the number that, you know, blow across the country, that has not been connected to overall climate change, to global warming, to the greenhouse effect. That remains very much an area of active science, of active research. Second, when we talk about adapting to the coming climate change, you know, there are just going to be some things that we cannot adapt to. There is no way to engineer structures to withstand a Category 5 tornado. But with that as the premise, what I did for the story is begin looking at what towns, cities, and states are doing to adapt to climate change. In other words, to change the way they build infrastructure, to change the way their public health systems are set up. Just what are they going to do so that when or as more climate change hits us, we will be better prepared for it? And again, as you sort of implied, the answer is they're doing not very much, and what they are doing is very unimpressive.
And I was thinking about, I don't know if you ever saw the series that was running on Planet Green, it may still be the town of Greensburg, was in Kansas or someplace in the middle of the country there. Sorry to be so coast biased, but they, you know, were flattened by a killer tornado a few years ago, maybe three, four years ago, and they decided to rebuild the town green in a sustainable way, and very fascinating, you know, study on what can be done. And yet, you know, now there's so many towns to rebuild, and they all should go green. Do you think we'll begin to see that at least factored in as these, you know, places get back on their feet?
You know what, Betsy, I'm a cynic, and I have, you know, the unfortunate fact for the good people of Greensburg and elsewhere is that they can do everything possible to, you know, go carbon neutral, and then there's the rest of the world. I mean, it's a great example. It shows that, indeed, you can run a city, you can run a household, you can run a business without spewing countless tons of carbon dioxide into the air. But unless there's a national and indeed a global agreement to curtail greenhouse gases, these are really just demonstration projects. Again, notable and laudable for what they are, but it's just not going to cut it. And, you know, when I say that towns, cities, et cetera, are not getting ready, you know, I'll give you one example. Chicago is actually a leader in climate change adaptation. And what they're doing, however, is planting more trees, which is great because, indeed, they will have more heat waves in the coming years. And trees exert a cooling effect. So that's a great help. But, you know, no one in northern tier cities is doing anything to prepare for the fact that what we used to quaintly call tropical diseases, dengue fever, malaria, yellow fever, those are all going to be creeping northward. No public health system is prepared for that.
Why do you think our country, Americans, you know, as far as the public mentality and also lack of government leadership, why are we this way? We're world-class deniers, and how do you think this is going to be some kind of comeuppance, not to not to in any way wish for this devastation on anyone, but, you know, it seems over the years people have said, gee, it's great what you're doing with your environmental radio program now on the Internet because mainstream media doesn't think we need one green talk show. But people won't pay attention until there's a crisis. And I used to then enumerate all the many crises that were already happening, even on the list back then. And so it seems that we are, in fact, waiting until our backs are up against the wall. And that leaves us a lot more vulnerable with a lot fewer options.
Well, it does. And you've basically answered your own question. But why Americans are, you know, among the world leaders in denying the reality of climate change and the severity of the coming climate change, you know, that's going to be the subject for countless dissertations in psychology. I mean, it's a very interesting question about how the
human mind works. In the postmortems when we're all gone?
Yeah, really.
why didn't they learn from the collapse of the Roman Empire? Why didn't they learn from, you know, how many, Easter Island?
But, you know, indeed, one part of the answer is that Americans are very bad at understanding that something is coming unless it's right in front of their eyes. And why should we be worse than, you know, let's say the Europeans, who are indeed way out in front in terms of mitigating the impact of climate change? You know, again, that's a subject of a dissertation or, you know, digging up to Tocqueville or something to understand the American character. But another part of it is, of course, if you accept that climate change is here, and then if you take the next step and acknowledge that it is caused, at least in part, by the greenhouse gas emissions that are the result of burning fossil fuels, then you're left with a very, very uncomfortable dilemma. You either have to say, I don't care, and it's, you know, just tough luck for my children and grandchildren that we're bequeathing them this world.
And yet these are the same parents, by the way, who will give their kids the best education and best health care money can buy.
Absolutely. Or you have to say, uh-oh, that means that I not only have to change my own behavior, but that I have to be very active in putting pressure on, you know, elected representatives to change the way the energy system in this country and the world works. And at that point, you know, just most people, and I do mean most, just throw up their hands and say, I can't deal with it. Let's hope the scientists are wrong.
Our technology will save us, or
yes,
our kids will figure out what to do. And I say shame on that attitude, because our kids are going to get plenty dumped on them just environmentally, just in terms of climate change. I say we baby boomers who have several decades ahead of us to make choices, you know, should educate ourselves, deep ourselves in the science, and do everything we can to start, you know, lessening the impact, if that's even possible, given how long CO2 alone is one main issue, the great mother of all issues, stays in the atmosphere. What do you say to people who say, you know, it just blows my mind because I've been, you know, on this beat long enough to have witnessed, you know, problem, what problem, to the next, you know, block in the cartoon. Oh, too late, you know.
Right. I asked them, for instance, do you take out fire insurance on your house? You know, the science of climate change is not 100% certain. There remain a lot of questions, you know, not to get too deep into the weeds here, but how will the feedback from clouds affect exactly how warm it gets? What will be the new precipitation patterns? Absolutely, there are unknowns, not about the basics, but, you know, around the edges. People who cling to the fact that it is not, you know, every T crossed and I dotted science say, you know, get back to me when the scientists know absolutely everything and have pinned it all down and there are no longer any uncertainties.
So if the telephones are still working.
Back to the insurance example. You don't know for a fact, and you will certainly hope that your house will not catch on fire, but you still buy fire insurance. The analogy, of course, is that we don't know for a fact exactly what the detailed patterns of climate change will be regionally, let alone at the level of an individual city. I'm sorry that San Francisco is getting a deluge these days. So
not complaining. We need it.
So we don't know those details, just as we don't know what the future holds for our own homes. But we do take out insurance, and again, the analogy would be, you know, let's see what we can do in terms of energy sources that do not spew the most carbon dioxide possible per unit of heat. Let's burn less coal. Let's move to natural gas and then to solar and to wind and to geothermal. That's the insurance policy.
And so one of the problems is, you know, just everyday parents tend to say, I'm too busy, what can I do about it? There's that inertia. And then there's also the special interest. Let's not make light of the power of the fossil fuel industry to keep the status quo. And then my pet peeve, passion, rant is the fact that, you know, there are so many talk shows on radio and television where they mock environmentalists, say climate change doesn't exist. I've been on some of those shows. and are laughing all the way to the bank, you know, getting big fat paychecks, while, you know, patriotic Americans who believe that this is God's wrath, and who knows, I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but don't even know what hit them, because the people who were in the areas that, you know, got hit, let's face it, are in the red, primarily the red states, maybe don't believe in climate change. And how sad is that, that we're saying if this is climate change, we're turning our backs on the plight of anyone in the path of, you know, these freak storms?
Well, and that's really what it entails, because until you grapple with the fact that it's here, you just completely remove any impetus to deal with the world, with what the world is going to be like. And as I said at the top of your program, you know, we see that lack of planning everywhere. And interestingly, the states and cities that have made at least a little bit of progress, they do have plans in place to deal with sea level rise, which is going to be one of the worst effects. They do have plans in place to harden infrastructure. They're building bridges higher than they otherwise would be because the level of the seas is rising. They're hardening structures so that when more powerful hurricanes strike, they won't be turned into, you know, a box of you know, kindling or something. When those places put through these plans, they many times don't even whisper the phrase climate change, because that does exactly what you're describing. It gets people, you know, crazy and opposed and say, no, we're not going to do this. If you just say, as Maryland has, for instance, look, we have lost thousands of acres of coast due to sea level rise. We have lost literally hundreds of islands in the Chesapeake Bay, which are now underwater. Maybe we better do something about this. If you put it that way and you discuss evidence that people can't deny because there it is in front of their eyes, that's
right,
the only way.
Mike Tidwell's been on the show several times, and of course he's with the Chesapeake Bay Climate Alliance, and of course wrote very prophetically about the loss of the Louisiana coastline before Hurricane Katrina hit. So, you know, they used to say, you know, well, they still do, many people, that, you know, environmentalists or people who are very concerned about climate change, those of us who lose sleep over it, even some of us journalists turned activists, I'm putting myself in that category, radioactive on green, you know, you're alarmists, you know, but we're seeing alarming events. And maybe the key, I used to be one that said, let's not go to focusing on adaptation quickly. Many environmentalists feel that then we're kind of given up. But if cities and municipalities are taking adaptive action measures, at the very least that hopefully will quash the conversation about this isn't real, this isn't happening. If you know, cash-strapped municipalities are spending money to adapt to climate change, that should pretty much kill the conversation from deniers, let's hope, or one would think.
We'll see.
So any positive news? You said there are some examples. But overall, if this kind of weather, as you say, you know, we're going to see more of this harrowing weather, and we are so ill-prepared, can America be strong again if we don't deal with these issues? It seems kind of hard to imagine.
We're going to see more Joplins. We're going to see more Hurricane Katrinas. We're going to see more of the non-catastrophic but just the chronic problems that climate change causes, whether it's heat waves killing hundreds of people in Chicago or, as happened last year in Russia, thousands of people. This will keep hitting us. As it happens, as you also alluded to, sometimes people become inured to it. This is the new normal. And only when something truly acute and catastrophic strikes does it capture their attention. But, you know, no, we're not prepared for it. And I'll just dip my toe into another controversial accusation that you mentioned, something that deniers throw at environmental activists all the time. Oh, you're worried about issues when there are so many poor people in the country who whose priorities are much different. Well, you know, I'm sorry to say, but rich people, to put it bluntly, are much better able to survive climate change. If, you know, you have the horrible misfortune of having your house destroyed by a hurricane or a tornado, if you've got money in the bank, you can rebuild. A lot of the people who are suffering, not only in Joplin, but as you pointed out, across the South, due to the tornadoes that hit in May, people who are losing their homes because of sea level rise, many of them don't have the resources to come back, or at least not easily. This really is an issue of economic equity.
Among the ironies and hypocrisies that you just touched on. And finally, you know, I'm sure you've been exasperated by people who say, and this is many, you know, my friends here in Marin County, where I live, you know, Betsy, people are just not going to care about environmental issues till we get the economy back on track and get jobs back. I say, well, if it were only that simple that we could continue to tell Mother Nature, could you just hold off a little while, wait there in the wings with your killer storms? Doesn't work that way.
Well, and also I'm sorry to say that we did not make huge progress in, you know, 2006, 2007, when the economy was going great guns. So
that's exactly the point I say. I said, I've been covering this beat long enough to know that when it was good times, hey, party on. Let the good times roll. Don't bother me with recycling. Don't talk to me about global warming. What global warming? And that's, again, that, you know, that cartoon that was actually in the New Yorker magazine showed George W. Bush with his head in the cloud saying, problem, what problem? The next one, oh, too late. You know, it's almost like that mentality here in America. And I fault the public, too. You know, there's enough blame to go around, and not that that's the point to blame, but, you know, we just can't be bothered as a country, and it's kicking us in the butt, and it's going to.
Yeah, I mean, of course you have to fault the public. What's the cliche that, you know, people get the government they deserve? Well, you know, these are the politicians we elect. This is what you get.
Well, that's why I'm thinking about steeping on the possibility of starting a green tea party for those of us who esteem that climate change is off the front burner, for those of us who are angry that our leaders are playing politics with the planet. And since all 30 of the Tea Partiers, I believe, who were elected into Congress in the fall, to a person, do not believe that climate change is a real problem, I think we need an alternative. What do you think?
Go for it.
All right. What it would do is tell people to vote for the greenest candidate in whatever political party they're in, because we cannot afford to have leaders who don't understand these very critically important and complex challenges. And right now there's the pendulum is swinging towards electing more of these people who, you know, have their heads in the sand, frankly. See, I used to be a journalist. Now I know too much. So I've gone to the dark side. I am green, but I'm all for, you know, unabashedly being, you know, aware, being cognizant of what we're facing. And like I say, steeping ourselves in the science, we just can't afford not to. And it should not be political. It's practical, after all.
Well put.
Thanks, Sharon Begley, for your great work. And I hope you'll be following up with more stories for Newsweek magazine. I'm going to recommend it to everyone I know. So
thanks,
I really
Betsy.
Appreciate Newsweek taking this on. Thank you, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking about the solution, some good news on the horizon, and that involves making solar panels and solar systems more accessible to more Americans. Lowe's and Sungevity announced a big new partnership about a week or two ago. We're going to be speaking to the CEO of Sungevity and find out all about how that came to be and what we can look forward to. Right back on the Green Front.
You are listening to...